Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You ever get that feeling like the concrete jungle's closing in? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to chase your own dinner, or just breathe clean air. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there waiting, and finding your piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, price, location. They've got it all. No matter what kind of wild dream you're chasing, land.com can help you find the ground to make it a reality. So quit dreaming. Head over to land.com, find your open space, and get out there.
And welcome to First Strike right here on VSiN. I'm your host, Dave Ross. For the next hour, we're going to break down everything for two title fights at UFC 277 and a really good-looking card ahead of those two title bouts. Going to have Lou Finocchiaro join me momentarily, Jordan Sherwood out of Chicago, Kevin Ioli, and Reed Kuhn to help break it all down for the next hour and try to find the very best value before you place those wagers for UFC 277. But without further ado, let's bring in the man that you can follow on Twitter, at Gamblu. He is the host of the Bout Business Podcast. He is the one and only Lou Finocchiaro. Lou, always great to catch up with you. You and I talked on Tuesday. The exercise on First Strike First Look is to look ahead before we get to today here on a Friday. In the last 3 days since we've spoken, you watched the weigh-ins today. Has there been any changes in the last 3 days in some of your handicaps after what you might or might not have seen at the weigh-in today?
Yes. To answer your question, a number of them. Before we get to that, though, I want to thank you for having me on such a great show. You and the producers at VSiN do a marvelous job at this production. And so there's a lot that we garnered from the weigh-ins today. Number one, I was cross-eyed Mary after betting or trying to bet Anthony Smith. And this is why I wait to the weigh-ins, because Anthony Smith weighed in about a half hour before the weigh-ins were to be completed. And he looked drawn and a little distant, I should say, and very relieved that he made weight. That's not the distraction you want in a plus 400 underdog. Mm. And so that affects how I look at that particular fight. Juliana Pena, on her behalf, stepped on the scale with a minute and 30 seconds left until the deadline. That said, she was vivacious, bubbly, effervescent, smiling, and looked sensational. Never in the 15 years I've been watching weigh-ins, and I watch them all, have I seen that tactic. It was clearly a tactic, and I think it exemplifies in many cases what she holds over her competitor in the main event, Amanda Nunes. And then finally, Perez and Pantoja. Pantoja has trouble with wrestlers. Perez is a wrestler. Problem with Perez, he doesn't make weight. He sailed to making weight today. And so for that reason, I think there's good need or good reason to want to take a look at Alex Perez and his fight against Pantoja.
That is fascinating, those observations from the weigh-in. And that's why we go through this exercise, because they are with merit in what you can glean from that. Let's get right to the main event then. When you mentioned the Venezuelan vixen, Juliana Pena. So you don't think there was any issue at all with making the weight? You think this was a tactical ploy by Pena, and do you think it worked? Because Amanda Nunes, look, it feels like now this is the best version of Nunes that Pena is going to see. But do you think we might actually see a better version of Pena?
I expect to see a similar version of Pena, and that's a fighter that is prepared for the storm that she's walking into, is prepared to walk through it and then dominate the fight after. And I believe that's exactly what will happen here.
Wow. And we have not really seen a move here. As you see, Nunes about a 265 betting favorite, Juliana Pena plus 225 on the comeback. The total there, Lou, is 2.5. How do you think this plays out? I've heard some people in the space that believe that maybe Nunes won't be as aggressive as she normally is in the first round to kind of keep that stamina, because it has been a problem in the past. I think that would work out fine for Pena. I think the longer the fight goes, it favors Juliana. So to me, I still expect Amanda to come out ferocious in that first round. What do you expect?
I'm worried that Amanda didn't train at AT&T with the normal people that she not only trains with but takes tutelage from. She's opened her own gym and did her own camp, and it's not to say that she didn't bring in professionals and doesn't have it all under control, but there's a lot of changes for her, and I don't trust how she's coming to this fight. And I think it's plausible and even probable that once the fire starts, Amanda just turns the switch on, because few gals have been able to withstand her force. Mm-hmm. She leads the women's bantamweight division in all-time finishes at 8. So this girl's a finisher, and that's what she does. I don't know if she can refrain from that, Dave.
I'm with you. I think it's almost dangerous when you get later on in your career to try to find new stripes. I know people still evolve in the fight game, but that's what Amanda Nunes does, and the who's who of who she's taking out in the first round. That's why I kind of figured there's two pathways there. Amanda could get this done early, or if Juliana can sustain it again like she did the first time around, she could get a stoppage maybe in round two like she did the first time. So very intriguing, the possibilities and the pathways for victory here. Let's go to the co-main event and what you saw today, if there's any change in Kai Kara France. And really, the money's been coming in on Brandon Moreno. This number's drifted up here since our talk on Tuesday. Any change in your posture after what you've seen today? Because I know you liked Moreno on Tuesday. Anything to cement those thoughts here on a Friday?
What I am willing to say on this fight, Dave, is that if it were held anywhere other than Phoenix, LA, or Texas, if it was in Toronto or Scotland or Indonesia, I'd be betting Kara France. That said, where this is, and it's Texas State Athletic Commission, then we look at the total in this fight, 4.5, and it's shaded over minus 180 or so, and we're looking at a decision. And I'm not certain Kara France can get a fair shake in this situation in Texas on Saturday night. And so for that reason, if I were betting this fight, I'd probably be trying to look at Moreno maybe via decision. However, there's a prop on DraftKings that I think makes the most sense to me here, because it's the Texas State Athletic Commission. I sense that there's a couple fights that could go to funny decision. And when you have one lined over 4.5 minus 180, this one goes to decision. Plus 500 is the price for this fight to go to a split decision or a majority decision.
Wow.
I think that's an investment I have to make.
Wow. Yeah, I do. I'm right there with you. I think that this is going to be a very close fight. I do lean towards Kai Kara France, because I think the price point is spot on for a close, what should be a very close fight. But it's very interesting, the judging. We've talked a lot about it here on First Strike through the months. In Texas, it's hard. They're still human beings. Not to hear that crowd and be affected by it, they're going to be a pro Brandon Moreno crowd. That is for sure. You mentioned Pantasia going to take on Alex Perez here. And you do think that Perez might be more live now after what you saw today in the weigh-ins?
He needed to make weight. He has struggled with weight. He had a couple fights scheduled against Matt Schnell. We've seen Schnell recently. Oh. And he was minus 300 in those fights. And so this isn't the Perez that got dominated by Figueiredo. This is a better Perez. As well, in the fighter interviews this week, they asked Moreno about this fight. He did an unbelievable job of breaking it down, so much so that he made me a believer. And the basic premise of his breakdown was that Pantoja on the feet is lethal, but he has trouble against wrestlers. Perez is a wrestler. Perez is bigger, taller, not quite as long, but I think Perez is very live in this fight, and as a underdog that opened plus 140, he's now plus 165, maybe 170. I'm all about Perez.
I got to tell you, too, I'm just so glad they didn't disband the 125-pound division, because it's certainly on display tomorrow night down there deep in the heart of Texas. Let's get to Jakar Close, a fighter that we talked a little bit on Tuesday, a guy looking for a new contract in the UFC. Do you think he's going to put that best foot forward for Dana White and company, say, I still belong to be here, give me that new contract, Uncle Dana?
Well, he was scheduled to fight Diego Ferreira, and that was going to be to enter the top 15. This man is highly regarded by the organization, and he's very, very motivated. I can guarantee that we're going to see the best Dracar Close on Saturday night that we can see. How that manifests itself, I don't think I can take him via inside the distance, though that's enticing. Rather, I'll probably use him as a basis for a parlay or two. But I think that he's in with a very, very favorable condition, and his opponent is tough and to be respected. But this is all about Close looking spectacular on Saturday night.
You know, we mentioned the judges and what you might see down there in Texas. Look, the Black Beast, Derek Lewis, is back. Has not really afforded himself very well at home, if you will, in some recent fights against Sergey Pavlovich here. Pavlovich, you got to think if this thing goes all three, would still get the decision the way that we kind of script this fight to go. Derek Lewis, the numbers are going against him here, even in his home state. What do you make of this matchup here for the Beast?
I don't trust the way the numbers are going. I watched a fight 5 years ago where Ilir Latifi, a blown-up light heavyweight, beat Derek Lewis in Texas, and Derek Lewis got the decision. So don't think for a minute that if this thing goes three, Pavlovich is any kind of shoe-in. Pavlovich was knocked out brutally by Alistair Overeem, and Lewis has every bit that power. Now, what's he done since then? We'll have to see. I don't trust that fight right now on a side perspective, but that fight to start round two is minus 120. That's a vomitorium bet. That means you go and you vomit all over that one.
Love it, Lou. How about Alex Morono here, plus $1.35 against Matthew Selmansberger here. Selmansberger is minus 155 here against Morono. What do you make of this matchup here? Feels like this one a little bit indecisive in the betting market.
Yeah, actually, Semmelsberger opened like minus 175, and so they've come in on Morono, the Texan. And I can see why they would. He trains at Fortis in Dallas but lives in Houston, and he's a tough guy. I just think he's stepping up against a guy that's bigger, younger, longer than he is. That said, this is Texas, and this is a fight that is, again, lined at 2.5 with the juice to the over. So again, this fight to end in a split decision or a majority decision is plus 500. I'm right back to the same well. I'm going to do it again.
30 seconds to go very quickly. The Bout Business Podcast, Lou. Tell the people what they get when they listen.
18 minutes of final releases for each UFC card. It drops this afternoon. Good luck to everybody, and thanks again for having me on, Dave.
Always a pleasure, Lou. When we come back, I'm going to go to Chicago. Jordan Sherwood up next on First Strike on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forest, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand, it's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at ZeroFoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products, it's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.
DraftKings Sportsbook is giving you plenty of ways to bet on the UFC. Just download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. You're going to be able to bet on more than just the main event. DraftKings has great odds on fight lines, total rounds, and features for all MMA events. Eligibility restrictions to apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for the full terms and conditions. We roll on this edition of First Strike as we preview UFC 277. Always great to go back to the great city of Chicago. Jordan Sherwood joins us. You can follow him, as I do, at WoodOn1063, and the host of the Unnamed MMA podcast. Jordan, great to have you back in the program. Very quickly, I know you had the Venezuelan Vixen. You got to catch up with her this week. What was that conversation like, and how confident is she going into this rematch?
Very confident. She definitely was not surprised by the first fight. She wasn't surprised by what Amanda Nunes had to say following the fight, and looks to repeat her performance. And she's going to do it probably in a similar fashion as her expectation. She's expecting a better Amanda Nunes, and I think everybody would expect that. But I think that the most hilarious thing is, like, we talked about, like, how she's going to celebrate. She's going to come back to Chicago. She's going to have some deep dish pizza. She's going to have some Chicago dogs, some Portillo's. So the Venezuelan Vixen definitely knows what's at stake, in particular, the food options for her coming to Chicago afterwards.
Well, and she knows it well. You know it well, and I know it well from my time there. So if she gets that her arm raised again, then we're going to start talking about, is there a new queen in town, certainly in this division? I think some are expecting Nunes kind of normalcy to return here. Does Juliana have to do anything different in the conversation you had with her, or is it the same pathway? Kind of try to extend the fight a little bit, survive the first round, and get into the cardio of Amanda Nunes?
Yeah, I mean, look, we've seen that be the kryptonite of Amanda Nunes throughout her, you know, Hall of Fame career. In the last fight, you know, you could think back to a fight against Kat Zingano that Amanda Nunes lost earlier in her career. Mm-hmm. You weather the storm, you show off superior cardio, and then you look to take Amanda Nunes to the ground and just either, you know, ground her out or look for a late finish. So I think, yeah, I think both fighters are going to be a little bit more reserved this time around. Certainly Amanda Nunes, she's not going to let it all out in that first round. And look, at the end of the day, outside of that, like, Amanda Nunes' cardio has been fine. So I think it was a combination of the first round performance and then as well as the battle with COVID that she was dealing with, the changing of camps. You know, not to say that she became like lethargic and was looking past Juliana Pena, but Amanda Nunes did say that she didn't really respect Juliana Pena, kind of looking past it. And we've seen that time after time, Dave, every single dominating champion, at some point, it's just what's driving them, what's going to make them want to put in max effort to continue to win these fights, because they've been winning them so easily. So I think all of that comboed with Juliana Pena, right fighter, right time, right place to get the win. I don't think it happens this time around. I'm on Amanda Nunes' side. I love the price that I'm grabbing her at 270, 265. From what I understand from her camp, she's in shape, she's mentally prepared, and she's not going to, you know, go balls to the wall, if you will, in that first round. She's going to be a little bit more reserved. And I don't know what Juliana Pena differently is going to do that Amanda Nunes wouldn't be prepared for. So I fully expect and knew to be called out on Saturday night. Amanda Nunes is going to once again be the bantamweight champion.
I think you and I see this fight the exact same way. And again, I was on Pena the first time around for a lot of those reasons that you mentioned. But I do think we should not forget the fact that Nunes did have COVID, and you could see the gas tank getting decelerated, if you will, very, very quickly in that time. We can't expect that to happen. I'm sure Pena is not expecting that. She's expecting a better version of Nunes. If she can beat her again, Nunes at the top of her game, that will really be more astounding to me. I'm right there with you. This is one of the best price points you're going to get on Amanda Nunes, the GOAT, as we like to say here, for women's MMA. Let's get to Alexander Pantoja against Alex Perez. And it was interesting listening to Lou and kind of breaking down what he saw in the weigh-ins today here on a Friday. Does it change your opinion at all with Perez, who struggled to make weight, but it looks like he didn't struggle this time around?
It doesn't. I mean, it would have made me feel a little bit better about my Pantoja selection, because obviously, yes, Alex Perez has not made weight several times. And this is actually the first time we've seen him since he got submitted very early in that Davidson Figueroa championship contest. But I just think Pantoja's better everywhere. I think people forget about just how hard he can push for three rounds. His fluid Muay Thai, so I don't, and the firefights that he's been in. So, you know, Alex Perez is going to have to rely on his power, which I don't think is going to be an issue for Pantoja to deal with. People forget Pantoja is one of the best black belts in the flyweight division, so he's well-versed on the ground. I love the price that Alexander Pantoja certainly is. I just, he's better everywhere, so I don't see Alex Perez posing a threat at all. So I certainly believe Pantoja is certainly worth the price. But I'm not leaning either way on a finish. I just think that the safe play is the straight up money line, because I certainly could see Pantoja getting a submission locked up at some point in the fight. But I just like the price that it's at, $1.75. He's just better everywhere.
Yeah, sometimes it gets tricky when you try to go method of victory here. But if you think Pantoja's got multiple ways to win, either with the hands or on the ground, then maybe you lay the chalk here a little bit at $1.75 instead of, you can see it's almost evenly priced. Sub is 3-1. KOTKRDQ is +450. I got burned on that last week with Patty Pimblett. I loved Patty in that fight against Jordan Leavitt, but I had him by KOTKO, and lo and behold, he gets the sub. So that's where the danger lies sometimes in these handicaps. So Jordan, I think your advice there is astute. You just lay the price tag here, $1.75, if you like Pantoja, as you do in that contest. Magomed Ankalaev, we understand why he's such a big favorite, over $5 betting favorite against the Lionheart Anthony Smith here, who does have a new contract now in tow in the UFC. And you feel like Anthony Smith is always one great fight away from being right back in title contention. I know Anthony thinks this could be that type of showcase against Ankalaev here. Any danger in the big favorite? Do you think he's just too much right now for the Lionheart?
I think he is too much for Anthony Smith, and what a story Anthony Smith is. But I love this fight because Anthony Smith is going to bring the fight to Magomed Ankalaev. Magomed Ankalaev has been reserved kind of his last three fights. You know, the last fight against Thiago Santos was awful. That was his showcase opportunity, and he kind of fumbled it. It was a 5-round boring decision win. You know, he had the win over Nikita Krylov, Volkan Oezdemir, good fighters in the light heavyweight division. Anthony Smith is going to come out and bring the fight to Magomed Ankalaev. And I like that, because prior to that, Magomed Ankalaev was killing people. He was finishing them. He was finishing them early. And this is a guy that likely should be 17-0 as opposed to 16-1. Paul Craig with a miraculous submission in that fight. So
right.
I actually love the under in this fight. I know a lot of people are on the over because of Ankalaev. He's just going to be patient and look for his opening. But I think Anthony Smith, the guy that's fought, 36 times, 34 times, have not gone to the judges' scorecards. He's going to bring the fight to Ankalaev because he needs an impressive win. Ankalaev then is going to be prepared to finish Anthony Smith, a guy that has been finished, I think, 8 of his 11 losses that have come, inside the distance. So I love the under it at 2.5. That's plus money. And yeah, you got to stuff Ankalaev into a parlay because obviously too big of a price just to lay straight up for him to win.
Well, again, you see the fight to go to the decision is minus $1.35. I'm with you. I look at this. Anthony Smith is going to throw up triangles. He's going to try to get this fight down to the ground. Normally you look at a Dagestani fighter and you go, well, he's going to be the guy that wants to get it down to the ground. No, Ankalaev wants to keep this standing. That's why KOTKODQ is plus $1.75 and a sub is 10-1 for Magomed. And conversely here, I think the power, they think that Anthony can't get it done with the hands at 12-1. Sub, obviously, is a big dog, 14-1. To me, the only method of victory for Anthony Smith really would be submission at 14-1. Do you think that's the better play if you were going to back the underdog?
I agree, yeah, Dave. That's a smart, astute point by you, because obviously we saw Ankalaev get submitted against Craig. It's certainly a good price. We know he's well-versed. That is Smith on the ground. So, yeah, it might be worth a shot if you're on the Lionheart side. I am not. I believe Ankalaev wins and wins in a decisive manner at some point in the fight.
Okay, you got Orion Koski going to take on Blood Diamond, Mike Diamond here. Diamond plus $1.65. What do you make of this matchup here? Do we have a live dog scenario in this one?
I don't. Look, Blood Diamond comes from a great camp. Obviously, very renowned kickboxer, good striker. But I think we see a similar fight play out to his UFC debut against Jeremiah Wells. Even though Koski didn't look great on the scale, I still think he looked good in his UFC debut. He's good enough to get this fight to the ground early and just get Blood Diamond out of there, because as talented as Blood Diamond is, he's a fish out of water when the fight goes to the ground. Very amateur in his overall mixed martial arts game. So under 1.5, I think we're going to get another quick finish. Blood Diamond's going to be tapped out of there.
Very quickly, about 30 seconds to go, Jordan, the Unnamed MMA podcast. I mentioned that you had Juliana Pena on this week. The names are getting bigger and better. Tell the people what they get when they tune in.
Yeah, I mean, look, we get my fight picks. We get analysis on every fight, basically on the main card, a couple of those flyers out there. Chicago theme, so we're going to expect to talk to Bilal Muhammad at some point soon. His big fight at UFC 280 against Sean Brady.
Remember the name, Bilal Muhammad, and remember his name as well, Jordan Sherwood. Follow him on Twitter, at WoodOn1063. Jordan, enjoy the fights, my friend. We'll catch up again next week. When we come back, Kevin Ioli is going to join the program. Come on back. It's First Strike on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You ever get that feeling like the concrete jungle's closing in? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to chase your own dinner, or just breathe clean air. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there waiting, and finding your piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, price, location. They've got it all. No matter what kind of wild dream you're chasing, land.com can help you find the ground to make it a reality. So quit dreaming. Head over to land.com, find your open space, and get out there.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand, it's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at ZeroFoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products, it's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.
Check out VSiN's Best Bets podcast. You can listen to daily sports betting highlights from the entire 24/7 stream of VSiN experts tracking line moves, odds, props, wins, losses, and bad beats from sportsbooks in Vegas and across the entire country. Download the VSiN Best Bets pod now at VSiN.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcast. Rolling along here, the UFC 277 preview. It is First Strike right here on VSiN. I am Dave Ross in Las Vegas. Always great to catch up with Kevin Ioli. Follow him on Twitter as I do, at Kevin I. Does a great job at Yahoo Sports. And Kevin, when I just look at your Twitter handle and I see here that you love all things Pittsburgh, the Penguins and the Steelers and the Pirates, you love golf, so do I. And you love Muhammad Ali. That was your idol. And we were talking a little bit before we began the program. I mean, those three fights with Ali and Frazier were just amazing fights. Does MMA, has there ever been a fight in mixed martial arts that can even compare to one of those three classics with Frazier?
Well, I think, you know, there have been some great MMA fights. I mean, you know, Robbie Lawler and Rory McDonald was a phenomenal fight.
Yes.
But I think what the Frazier-Ali fights in all of combat sports were special because of the social significance that they carried, right? I mean, Muhammad Ali was one of the most known people in the world at the time. And they were on all the mainstream television shows. And, I mean, so the social significance that, especially the first fight, but all three of them carried, you know, there's no other fight ever in any combat sport that can touch it.
Well said. And when Ali got out of prison and they said, well, you're still relevant. And he was in New York City. And he said, I'll tell you what, if I walk out of this cab right now and I don't stop traffic, then, you know, you don't have to make the fight happen. There's an iconic picture of Ali stopping traffic in New York City simply by just stepping out of that car. So, yeah, the social significance of those guys, that era, it is spectacular. Let's get to UFC 277 here, because I'll talk about that all day with you, Kevin. There's some really intriguing fights that are not just obviously the two title bouts that are on hand, but I do want to go to the co-main event here and get your thoughts on Kai Kara France against Brandon Moreno. Moreno, of course, speaking of significance, the first Mexican-born UFC champion ever at 125 pounds. Right now, Davison Figueiredo has that strap back. This is an interim belt title bout. What do you make? The first time around was a very good fight back in 2019 that Moreno won by unanimous decision. Now in this five-round potential fight here, any changes that you might see in the second time around?
You know, I think they both have improved. You know, maybe Kara France has improved a little bit more than Moreno has done. But look, Moreno has fought better competition. He's been in three consecutive title fights. This will now be his fourth title fight. You know, three amazing fights with Figueiredo. He could have won all three. He could have lost two of the three. You know, the middle one, he had a submission. He was dominant. I actually thought he won the last one in Anaheim. I had him winning that fifth round, which was the decisive round in the fight. One judge gave it to him, two of the other ones didn't. So I like Moreno in this fight because I think he's fought better competition, and I think he's longer, and I think he can do more things. Kai Kara France comes from an amazing gym, the home of Israel Adesanya and Alex Volkanovski, so you can't shortchange that team because they know what they're doing. I like Moreno here, though. It's a big number to lay against a guy like Kara France. I had it minus 225, but I really do like Moreno to get the interim title.
Yeah, and again, you're right. Where Kai Kara France and the guys he's training with, that gives me a little bit of pause as well. The money is coming on Moreno. It's juiced now to the over 4.5 rounds. Any way that we get a stoppage, Moreno not really known to get stoppages here in this 125-pound weight class. Kara France can. We know that the hands, the power that he has there. Any chance that we might get something, maybe of a bit of a surprise if we got the under 4.5 rounds?
I mean, obviously, he finished Figueiredo and under that, right? And he finished him in the third round. So, you know, he has the ability to do it. I think it's going to go the distance, though. I think this is, you know, both guys are really primed for this fight. Both guys are tough. You know, the fact that that Moreno won all those rounds with Figueiredo and didn't get finished is saying something. So I think this is going to go the whole way. So I'm not going to advocate it, but if I were to bet the, I would bet the over on the that play.
And again, if you like that and try to get plus money out of it, if you like Moreno via decision, it's plus 140 instead of laying the bigger price tag over that $2 betting favorite. It's Texas. We know they love the Black Beast down there. Derek Lewis, of course, against Popovich here. Popovich, though, the money's come in on him here. Only one loss early on in his MMA career. You know, again, we know the pathway for Derek is going to be the hands. And nobody normally can withstand his power. We understand that. Plus $1.25 now. What do you make of this matchup? Could Sergey just win on points and stay at a distance and try to avoid the power of the Black Beast?
I mean, everybody tries to do that, and there's some guys, you know, that do it better than others, but nobody has really done it for a long period of time very well. I like Lewis here as an underdog. I really do. I mean, he has fought a much higher level of competition. Pavlovich is a combat Sambo fighter, so I think, you know, you'll see some stand-up in this fight. But I think Lewis, you know, I mean, you think of his fight with Volkov a couple of years ago, right? And he lost every minute of that fight until, like, the final 20 seconds, and he lands one shot and he knocks him out and wins the fight. I think that's the kind of power Lewis has, and I just don't think Pavlovich has faced anybody with the combination of power and quickness that Derek has. Derek is quick for a big guy like that, and he's agile, and he's really good at cutting off the ring and making you fight in confined spaces. And if you're going to beat Derek Lewis, you cannot fight in a confined space. You're going to lose that more often than not. Tai Tuivasa was able to do that last time, but Tai Tuivasa is the same kind of fighter as Derek Lewis. Sergey Pavlovich is not. I like Lewis in this one, and I will go ahead and take the plus money right there.
Yeah, and again, you referenced the fight against Volkov led to one of the more entertaining post-fight interviews. As Derek Lewis, just decided to take his pants off for reasons that we really shouldn't discuss on the show right now. But Kevin, yeah, you look at Derek Lewis and the pathway, really, it'd be tough to see him winning by decision. That's plus 750. Would you take the extra money at plus $1.65 instead of just the plus $1.25, assuming it has to be KO, TKO, or DQ for the Black Beast to win this fight?
I do. I think he's going to win it by a finish. I really do. I mean, I think that, you know, you're going to see them start slugging it out. And, you know, it's the old cliche is true. When it's heavyweights, you never know what's going to happen. When you get a 250-pound man swinging at the other one, you know, anything can happen. But Lewis has historically shown us, you know what, A, he's got a good chin. If he's vulnerable, he's vulnerable to submissions. And B, you know, he has power that not many people can withstand. So I think Lewis does get it done.
You know, Kevin, I've been intrigued all week by the price tag associated with Lionheart here against Magomed Ankalaev.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've really been touting that I think this should be a much more competitive fight than the odds makers have made it out to be. But we saw Smith at a tough weight cut today to make it at 206, you know, in this 205-pound weight class. Does that deter you at all? Or did you think that really the right side all along was Ankalaev?
Well, you know, I like Smith. And I thought this would be like, you know, maybe minus three something, you know, plus two something. I was shocked by the number in this fight. And I just think, you know, that Smith, he's learned so much from the John Jones fight. Yeah, he had that bad performance against Glover Teixeira. But I think when you look at that, that was Glover Teixeira's, you know, on his path to the title. And Teixeira had started working with UFC PI and had significantly raised his game. But other than that fight, you know, Smith has looked really good. I think he knows this is his last shot. He feels counted out against Ankalaev. And, you know, Ankalaev didn't look that great, you know, his last time out. So, the odds are would tell you that, hey, Ankalaev wins that. But if I can get a guy like Anthony Smith who can go, you know, long, deep into fights, who has good grappling, not an easy guy to get down, his striking is solid, Yeah, I'm going to take a shot with him at plus 425.
I see it the exact same way. I hope that the weight cut doesn't deter me from that, but that's exactly the way I've been thinking about that fight all week, leaning towards the Lionheart, certainly at that price point. You know, the last time we saw Drew Dober, Terrence McKinney, unbelievable first round, one of the best first rounds you're going to see. You know, we saw Matt Schnell a couple weeks ago. To me, that's fight of the year already, to not get knocked out and somehow turn around and win that fight. That's kind of what Dober did the last time out. Any problems against Alves in this one? Drew about a $1.70 favorite here.
I think Drew is a cut above, right? Alves, a guy came off the Contender Series, got good submissions, right? But Drew, you know, Drew is a black belt. I don't think the same high level of black belt as Alves, but I think that gives him that defense that he needs in that fight. And Drew is just a tough, hard-nosed guy. And you look, you know, and he has 11 losses in his career, but over the last 5 or 6 years, he's lost only 3 times, I believe. And it's all of those elite guys, you know, Makhachev at the top of the division. You know, so when you're losing to those really high-level guys, you know, I think, you know, you can explain that away. I think he knows he needs to win in this fight. I like Dober a lot here.
Yeah, it was just a sensational comeback victory the last time out against Chicago's finals. So see how he does against Alves on Saturday night. Kevin, I really always appreciate your time and your conversation, my friend. And again, sometime we'll have to go down that primrose path and talk about Ali and Frazier. If Eddie Futz just lets Frazier go out there for the final round, history could be so different.
Who knows?
What an amazing trilogy that was. Kevin, enjoy the fight Saturday night. We'll catch up again next week.
Anytime, brother. Thanks for having me.
There he is, everybody. Kevin Ioli does an amazing job over at Yahoo Sports. When we come back, Reed Kuhn's going to rejoin the program, as it's always great to have Reed in an analytical breakdown to these fights. Come on back. It's First Strike on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forest, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand, it's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at zerofoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products, it's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.
Back here on First Strike on VSiN, Dave Ross, joined once again each and every week by Reed Kuhn. Follow him on Twitter as I do at Fightnomics, and also the author of a book of the same name. Reed, before we get to the fight card this week, you put out some majestic dishes on fight night. When did this become a tradition for you, sir? And how do you decide what you're going to make?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it started back when UFC events were only once every 2 months. And when I was inviting people over, it turned into let's do steakhouse, because we did a steakhouse before a fight night one time at a stadium. And it evolved into, you know, I need something to do. A fight card is 6 to 7 hours long.
Right.
And I might be sweating some big bets, so I need to keep occupied, pour some wine, entertain the guests. And this week, stay tuned. I've got a guest chef in the house for this weekend, so it should be good.
Cannot wait. Again, that's why you got to follow him on Twitter at Fightnomics. It gets me salivating during those fight cards. And I'm like you. I'm a pacer sometimes. If you got a wager out there, you get a little nervy. I got to walk around a little bit sometimes. I get a little superstitious with these fight cards. Let's talk about this one here, two title bouts. Let's start right at the top with Amanda Nunes trying to get her strap back against Juliana Pena. And obviously, you see the price points now. The first time around, she's about a $9 minus $1,000 at some places here to retain her strap. Of course, we had one of the bigger upsets we've ever seen in the history of the UFC with Juliana Pena winning that night. Now she's laying 265, so the respect is there for Pena when you're going up against the GOAT in Amanda Nunes. Does this fight go differently in your estimation when you look at the numbers? And if so, how does that happen?
So in the numbers, we are including that fight. And you know, if you regress the mean a little bit, Amanda Nunes looked amazing in round one. She looked not so good in round two. Something was clearly off, and I was supporting her. I thought she was a no-brainer for that fight. And after round one, I thought, okay, this is a layup. And then we saw lightning strike, and the question is are we going to see lightning strike twice? Are we going to see a repeat of round two or round one? I tend to believe it's going to be round one. I think a healthy Amanda Nunes is still one of the best in the business. It takes a lot to shut her down. She's gone toe-to-toe with dangerous strikers, and in that last fight, she seemed to be willing to brawl. It just looked sloppy. So I think we're going to see a little bit more of the old Amanda Nunes, and that Amanda Nunes is plenty enough for me to back her as a favorite here.
Yeah, and again, when you only have to, I say only, you got to lay the 265 here in the greatest practitioner we've ever seen in women's MMA. I see it the exact same way. Now, again, I think where some people might differ, and I don't know if the models have shown you anything here for the 2.5 rounds here, whether or not the over or under might be in vogue. Do the numbers indicate how this fight might go? Because Nunes, I just think first round she's coming out, you know, ball of fire here. I'm sure that Juliana would like to extend the fight and get into that gas tank a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if I foresee a first round finish, but there is finishing potential on both sides. And what we saw from Jessica Pena is that she can finish a fight if you give her one opportunity. You know, she rocked Amanda Nunes. That's what it looked like to me. She took some damage. She put herself in a bad spot, and that was enough. But the same thing goes in reverse. Like if Amanda Nunes starts landing those strikes, putting her on the mat like she did in round one, eventually she's going to find an opening for a submission or a finish. And so usually when her price is so inflated at -1,000 or, you know, -700 for some prior fights, it was the submission prop that was the really sneaky bet, you know, the plus money bet that pays out. I don't know if I'm going to play a prop at this point because her price is actually reasonably affordable. So I think I'm just going to play her straight up and hope for the best. Hope we see the old Amanda Nunes.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. And I kind of do, again, see it very, very similarly playing out tomorrow night. Let's get to the co-main event. We know it's down in Texas. We know Brandon Moreno is a fight favorite wherever he fights, but certainly down in Texas. And now you got a layover $2.215 here in this rematch against Kai Kara France, which is a very competitive fight the first time around in 2019. It does feel like that both fighters have gotten better since the first time they matched up. Kai Kara France, we know he's one of the biggest punchers at 125 pounds. Are the numbers showing that there's a potential upset in the making here?
Yeah, if there is, it's Kai Kara France's hands. You know, you just said that he's one of the harder punchers. Statistically speaking, that is true for the flyweight division. The only other guy, heavy hitter, that I would put up there is Davison Figueiredo. So, and Brandon Moreno went toe-to-toe with him for three fights in a row. Kai Kara France does have six knockdowns. He has twice the knockdown rate of his opponent here. But just as he has been getting better, so has Brandon Moreno. Both guys came into the UFC very young. And there is a learning curve. And there is such a thing as you usually hear the youth advantage for me looking for the younger guy. There is such a thing as too young. Guys coming in at 21, 22, those guys have some growing to do, grow into themselves, get more experience. Brandon Moreno has done that. He has turned into a dual threat fighter, a dual level fighter. And I think he can win this on the mat. Mm. So should he go toe to toe? I think he can hold his own. But why do that? Why do that when Kai Kara France is so heavy handed? Take him down, put him out of his element, eliminate his best weapon, and hopefully grind him out or submit him. So that's what I'm hoping from Brandon Moreno. But honestly, it's the line where it is probably accurate. It's appropriately priced. I don't think I'm going to pay much more than that. So I don't know if I'm going to bet this one, depending on where the movement goes, but I am picking Moreno.
This is so interesting, too, to your point here about the finishing potential. By sub for Moreno, you can get a nice plus price at +350, but KOTKRDQ, +$4. So it's telling you right there that it's really tough. He can beat you both ways, right? And I got burned a little bit by the Paddy Pimblett fight last week in London because I thought it was going to be KOTKO the only way he'd beat Jordan Leavitt. And lo and behold, he sinks in a choke and gets the stoppage that way. Is the proclivity here win by finish? Do we have finishing potential? Because we know Kai Kara France wants to throw those hands, but you just mentioned Moreno can get you out either way.
I like Moreno here, and I do think he can get a finish. I don't think Kai Kara France is invulnerable, both in stand-up and on the ground. Now, our totals model usually takes a contrarian view, and so we're actually going over here. But I disconnect those two things. Me, personally, looking at who's going to win, I do see if you're going to get +200 on Moreno for a finish, I might take a small stab at that one. But overall, yeah, Moreno going the distance is actually my ideal play.
Speaking of fighters that are very popular down in Texas, we know Derek Lewis is one of the fan favorites, again, wherever he fights, but certainly down in the Lone Star State. The Black Beast right now, the money's been coming in on Sergey Pavlovich here as the week has gone on. So you got a lot of data, certainly on Lewis. Do you have enough on Pavlovich to feel strong either way?
It's tough. I know we've been here before where we have a new up-and-comer. He technically has 3, 4, 5, even sometimes fights with like Tom Aspinall, but they finish their opponents so quickly, it's not a lot of data. So when you look at this on paper, he has amazing metrics, just like Aspinall did last week. But Pavlovich, way more accurate. He's bigger. He's younger. He's a southpaw. Arguably, he hits harder on a per strike basis. Imagine that.
Wow.
He actually has a higher knockdown rate than Derek Lewis, which is kind of mind-boggling. But hopefully hopefully he has learned not to mess around with someone like Derek Lewis. He learned that from being knocked out in the first round against Alistair Overeem. If Pavlovich takes his time, he wears Lewis down. Hopefully that gas tank empties at the end of the first round. Throwing a lot of body strikes, Lewis tends to react to those very strongly. That's what I'm banking on here. But numerically, yeah, there was a lot of advantages on Pavlovich. When I saw him as an underdog, I was all over it. Maybe less so now as a clear favorite, but I still like Pavlovich here.
Yeah, that number has changed a lot as the week has gone on. That is for sure. As we keep going down this main card, we've got the Battle of the Alexes here. Alexander Pantoja going to take on Alex Perez. Again, Perez, the story's always been about weight. It looks like the weight is not a problem here. Do you have enough data? Certainly on Pantoja. Do you have enough data here to really make a good conclusion on what might happen in this one?
Yeah, I'm leaning Pantoja, and when asked to explain this, it's hard for me because this is one of those matchups. I'm looking at the numbers. They look pretty back and forth. You know, I actually see some advantages for Perez. He is the more aggressive wrestler. He does have a lot of leg kicks. He's even finished someone that way. That's dangerous. But Pantoja has been in against more elite talent. And so if I'm sizing them up, I see a lean toward Pantoja. I think he's a valid favorite here. Again, not going to pay a lot for him. I think he's properly priced as a favorite. So that's going to be my lean. And I'm also going to stretch this. I'm going to say that this goes the over. And that's going to be, you know, if you're going over 2.5, you're probably gonna have to lay a little juice. But again, those are two opposite models making opposite predictions. But in general, Pantoja is my lean here.
Yeah, over is -$1.45 to go over 2.5 rounds here. If you think the fight's going to go the distance, -$1.25. You know, Ankalaev against Lionheart is a very intriguing matchup. We know Magomed right now, he's the fast riser, but really hasn't shown out in his last couple fights. Maybe a little bit lackluster here for a guy with a stellar record like he has. I know you got tons of data in Anthony Smith here. We have over a $5 betting favorite for the Dagestani fighter. How do the numbers show this fight to go?
Yeah, I'm all over Ankalaev, and the numbers agree with me. He is the more accurate fighter. He is the more heavy-handed fighter. He is better on the ground in terms of controlling position. He has advantages all over the place. And this is a guy that I think eventually is going to be a title contender. Beating someone who formerly fought for the title is a good start. Maybe he's one fight away, but Ankalaev seems to be the obvious layup here.
Yeah, and again, you can understand why it's so priced where it is. Do you think, though, very quickly in about 20 seconds, the over is -$1.50, 2.5 rounds. Ankalaev going to try to go for a stoppage here? He has not done that recently.
If they actually stand and trade, I think we're going to see some head kicks or something crazy. I do like a finish, but I stay away from totals on the light heavyweights. This is going to be fireworks, though.
Reed, great stuff as always, my friend. I can't wait to see what you got on the menu, and we'll see you next week here in First Strike. I want to thank Kevin Ioli, Jordan Sherwood, and Lou Finicaro as well. Enjoy the fights, everybody. We'll see you next week right here, First Strike on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You ever get that feeling like the concrete jungle's closing in? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to chase your own dinner, or just breathe clean air. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there waiting, and finding your piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, price, location. They've got it all. No matter what kind of wild dream you're chasing, land.com can help you find the ground to make it a reality. So quit dreaming. Head over to land.com, find your open space, and get out there.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand, it's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at ZeroFoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products. It's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.
It is First Strike Overtime right here at VSiN. Dave Ross alongside producer extraordinaire Britton Hess does a great job of putting together First Strike and First Strike First Look on Tuesdays. Britton, always good to have you in the hot seat and get your thoughts on UFC 277 with two title bouts on record here that could be very explosive after what we saw in the weigh-ins here on Friday. I wonder if you glean anything differently from them. Let's talk about the main event because, boy, we were the consternation level. Juliana Pena, is she gonna show up? Is she struggling to make weight? And then maybe it was dramatic effect, but not only did she make weight, but she looked fantastic in making the weight here in the rematch against Amanda Nunes. Head games that she's trying to play with the GOAT in women's MMA?
Yeah, I think the first fight was complacency all around. Complacency on us as betters. Complacency on Amanda for taking it Juliana lightly. Thought she could just go out there, steamroll in the first round, and obviously she gassed. She was dealing with COVID. She was a new mother. She was all those things. So there's plenty of reasons that we can, you know, point to for that performance. That said, I'm thinking Amanda comes in here. It comes in, strikes fast, strikes hard, no mercy. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, and Amanda Nunes will knock your head off.
So yeah,
that's where I'm at on this.
I kind of look at it the same way, yeah. And I know some believe that maybe this fight goes over the 2.5 rounds. I don't really think at this stage of her career that she's going to change up the strategy that much. She almost had Juliana Pena with all those conditions we mentioned the first time around, almost got her out of there in the first round. Mm-hmm. So to me, I kind of look at it like you're going to see a better version of Nunes. And if she believes that, she might get this done in the first round, like she's done against the Ronda Rouseys, like she's done against the Chris Cyborgs and the Misha Tates, literally Hall of Famers that she's gotten out of there in no time at all. No disrespect to Juliana Pena. I don't know that she's on those level of fighters yet.
Yeah, no, she really is not. And you, me, and the other half of the producing team of this, Rob, were texting this morning, and Rob made a great point. When are you going to get a price like this on the GOAT? You know, so I think not only Amanda wins, I think inside the distance Amanda wins.
Yeah.
I mean, and unders are good. They're correlated. You know, this is crazy. We haven't seen it too often lately, but Amanda with a submission. Ooh. That was a big part of her game for a while there.
It was.
And then, you know, her hands have been good. So why, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But I don't know. I mean, maybe she surprises Pena, tries to get a takedown, grabs a neck, hops on her back, whatever. I think there's a lot of paths for Amanda. I mean, she's the favorite, rightfully so. And like I said, you know, I don't want to have recency bias. And you know what I mean? And that you can make an argument. Juliana did it. Why would she not win again? And it's like, I don't think we saw the best Amanda, and I did think we saw the best Juliana. I think Amanda now knows what the best Juliana is, and she's going to be ready for it.
Normally in UFC history, historically, the rematches go the same way the first fight did. But I do think there's a lot of factors at play as to why this will be different this time around. I do see it very similarly to the way you do. I wonder in the co-main event here if you think there's any changes from 2019. Because again, Brandon Moreno, one of the more popular champions, certainly at 125 pounds. Now Davison Figueiredo is back to being the champion after a controversial loss from Moreno last time out. And now a rematch against Kai Kara France, a very competitive fight in 2019 that Moreno won via unanimous decision. But this now potentially a 5-round matchup. I look at it and say, well, Kai Kara France is arguably the second biggest puncher in the division. Figueiredo, the biggest puncher. So does that deter any rationale for Moreno saying, hey, if I can handle Figgy's power, I can handle Kai Kara France's power?
I mean, that's it. All morning, I've been talking to the guys in the back saying, you know, France has really fast hands. He's got good power. But like we said, Moreno just saw the most powerful guy in the division. And it's not even really close. Figueiredo is just so big for that division.
Yep.
You know, I don't think that the power and speed is really going to affect Moreno at all. And I mean, it's not a perfect analog, but I keep thinking about Kai Kara France's loss to Brandon Royval. It was a slobber knocker. They were all over the cage, fighting, rolling around, scrambling all over. But it ended up with Royval getting the submission. And I think Moreno is a great submission artist that people don't remember because we've seen Moreno, you know, boxing most of the time with Figueiredo in his last three fights. But people also don't remember. Nobody really knew who Moreno was before that trilogy, right?
Right.
But you know what Moreno was doing before that trilogy? He was submitting guys left and right. I want to say he's got double-digit submissions in his career. Plenty in the UFC. Yeah, he's got 11 submissions out of 19 wins.
He's got one against Figueroa,
and,
too.
You know, if there's, you know, maybe France has a power advantage on the hands, but it's slight, right? But yeah. On the ground, it's not even close.
No.
Moreno can run away with this on the ground if he gets there.
And a couple thoughts here. One, I'm just glad the 125-pound division is still in vogue. They, years ago, talked about getting rid of it because look at these fighters. Sensational fighters here. The one thing that I, as a Kai Kara France guy in this fight, I do look at the training partners. And I do look at Alexander Volkanovski and Israel Adesanya. And I do think that matters. And I do think he's gotten better since 2019. But I think your point is valid, too, that Moreno, people almost forget now because they just remember the Figgy fights. They do not remember the fights pre-Davison Figueiredo. And they were sensational for Brandon on his ascent to being one of the best that we've seen at 125 pounds.
I mean, he did submit, you know, the surprise submission of Figueiredo. Yep. But I'm saying that people, you know, think, oh, it was, you know, rear naked choke. I think it was rear naked. Yeah, it was rear naked, you know, which, you know, kind of anybody in the UFC. If you're a UFC fighter, hopefully you know how to get that submission.
Yeah.
But he is a high-level Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, and I want to make sure people are aware of that. The training partners that Kai Kara France has, though, the takedown defense of that whole camp is amazing. None of those guys are grinders, really, wrestlers or anything like that. You know, they're capable. But Izzy, unless he's fighting a guy who's 25 pounds heavier than him up a weight class, it's hard to take him down. Obviously, Volkanovski is great takedown defense. Kai Kara France is also good takedown defense. You know, the thing is, I hate to be a record gazer, but Kai Kara France has 9 losses for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, not a lot of them have been recent, but he isn't that supernatural talent that Izzy and Volk have been their entire fight careers. He, you know, he's made a lot of himself and it's impressive. Mm-hmm. And I love him as a fighter. I mean, it makes it sound like I, you know, think he's nothing. He's amazing, but I think that Brandon Moreno has so much more to offer in the cage.
Yeah, this is the best version of Kai Kara France, but is it good enough, to your point, just natural talent level, to be as good as Brandon Moreno has shown? That's a big if for sure. Let's stay in that weight class with Alexander Pantoja against Alex Perez. Our experts in First Strike, I feel like we're kind of split on this fight a little bit here. Do you have a lean here? Because we know that it's always been Perez. Can he make weight? Well, he answered that question, at least on the scale. Does he answer the question inside the octagon?
So we're looking back at Pantoja's last 6 fights. He's 4-2. The 2 losses are Davison Figueiredo and Askar Askarov, 2 guys that don't really lose. So, you know, unless Askarov loses to Kai Kara France. But,
right.
You know, he beat Brandon Royval along the way, who's the guy who beat Kai Kara France. So if we're playing MMA math, it's really confusing,
it's
right?
It's a deeper division than people give credit
for,
yeah. Right?
He beat Manuel Cape. You know, I think Pantoja has the pedigree. I think that it is, like Lou brought up earlier, I have the benefit of coming on after everyone else. Perez finally made a weight. He didn't, you know, it looked good. Maybe it wasn't a tough weight class. My opinion is that maybe just, I want to stay away. I feel like there's too many variables happening right now. I think Alex Perez is a great fighter. I think he's beat some good guys. But, you know, again, it's just like I've never seen him in this form, so I don't want to come out with a strong opinion.
And again, that we try to always tell this and educate the betting public. That's when you have differing opinions and certainly different thought process for a guy that struggled to make weight. Now Alex Perez looks better making weight. If you lean towards Pantoja, you don't have to wager on that fight after seeing what happened in the weigh-ins. I wonder if you're going to wager on the Black Beast, Derek Lewis, against Sergey Pavlovich here. And Pavlovich, the money's been coming in on him big time this week. We know the skill set, right? And Derek Lewis would be the first guy to tell you, I can get outclassed, right? But we also know the power that the Beast has here. Is there danger in that with Pavlovich, or does he use his superior skill, stay at a distance, and make it a 3-round boring fight?
So Pavlovich is 3-1 in the UFC. First round loss to Alistair Overeem. He got KO'd. Mm-hmm. Then he's got 3 first round KOs since then. The problem is those guys that he's fought are all bottom of the division guys. They're all the strength of schedule isn't even in the same planet compared to Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis has fought a who's of title contenders, title belt or title winners. Pavlovich has been fighting the Shamil Abdurakhimovs of the world. He's been fighting Maurice Crochet Boss Green. Mm. He's been fighting Marcelo Gomes. All guys that aren't going to be coming near. These guys don't even fight on main cards.
No.
You know what I mean? These are like early prelim guys and he's running through them, which is good. It'd be bad if he wasn't, but Alistair Overeem in 2018, so he was younger then, but that still wasn't prime Alistair Overeem, and he knocked him out in the first round. Derek Lewis is still Derek Lewis for all his faults and all of his strengths. They're all still present. I think that the strength of schedule, the fact that it's in Texas, and I mean, it's just the plus money, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If Lewis was laying $1.20, then I would say probably not. But if you're going to give me $1.25, I don't know how you don't look at Derek Lewis in this spot, because he's got the great equalizer at any point in the fight, any round, any moment.
I'm stunned how the line move has gone as the week's gone on to get Lewis now up to $1.25 a betting underdog here. I wonder where it's going to go in the next 24 hours before the fight. Got to wrap it up here, First Strike Overtime, but very quickly, give me either your best bet that you see. It can be the main card or the undercard, or sometimes, Britton, you have a bomb for us. Anything you like this week?
Honestly, I would say my favorite is Amanda Nunes inside the distance.
Okay.
You know what I mean? If you want to,
you get plus money.
Yeah, you can get plus money there. I love that. And I, you know, I also got to throw out, I'm from Nebraska. I got to say Anthony Smith, Nebraska guy, Drew Dober, Nebraska Lionheart guy. So if you want to make the Nebraska parlay with Anthony Smith plus 420 and Drew Dober minus 170, you know, you'd get a lot of Nebraska credibility.
All right, Cornhusker Nation, stand up.
Yeah, exactly.
Britton, great stuff as always. Does a great job both behind the glass and in front of it. Thanks for watching First Strike Overtime. Enjoy the fights, everybody. We'll see you next week right back here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified?
Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander, or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So Toyota is electrified diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.